excited about this interview. Retired Admiral James Stravitis and author Elliot Ackerman join us this morning to discuss their new book, 2034, A Novel of the Next World War. Admiral Stravitis spent more than 30 years in the U.S. Navy, rising to the rank of four-star admiral, and who served as the Supreme Allied Commander at NATO. Elliot Ackerman is the author of several novels, including Dark at the Crossing, which was a finalist for the National Book Award, and most recently, Waiting for Eden. They are here to discuss what it is like writing a novel on the next world war, the lessons it offers national security professionals and policymakers, and key points in the backstory that precipitated the march to this fictional but highly realistic portrayal of the next world war. It is a great pleasure and honor to welcome Admiral James Stravitis and Elliot Ackerman to our program this morning. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. Elliot, let's begin with you. I always have you on when your new books come out because I'm a big fan, and you always write just in such a compelling style. Give me a sense of how this project came about.
The idea of this project was really conceived by the admiral, who had the idea of, you know, writing a work of speculative fiction that imagined a war with China that began in the South China Sea. And he approached our shared editor at Penguin Press with the idea. He knew that the two of us were already friendly, and we decided to collaborate and put out a first chapter, and the rest is history.
So, Admiral, what was your interest and in the idea behind the story that you thought you could bring to completion?
I look back at Cold War literature, Joe, Dr. Strangelove, Red Storm Rising, Failsafe, The Bedford Incident, and it occurred to me that no one is writing that kind of Cold War cautionary tale about the possibility of the U.S. and China going to war. I've always believed that in so many ways, when we have these big national failures, Pearl Harbor, 9/11, a 20-year war in Afghanistan, the pandemic, a lot of it is because we have failed to really imagine our way into the future. So the idea of writing a book, a novel, where you could really push the boundaries and move it out to, in this case, 2034, the title is the year. It appealed to me to be able to say to policymakers and every reader imaginable that we have got to avoid getting into a war with China. This would be a terrible outcome, frankly, for both nations.
2034, I mean, when you initially say it, sounds like it's very far away, but it really isn't, as we know, just in, thinking of the turn of the century, and now we're at 2021. So the years do go roll by. So we're not all that far out. What was it, Elliot, that kind of pinpointed this year to make it a good thing that this is something that could happen over the next decade plus?
Well, Joe, you know, the books that I've written have kind of come in one of two categories. Ones are the one where the title is immediately obvious, and the second is when the title only presents itself much later. And that was the case with 2034. When we began working on this project and thinking about the scenarios we've outlined, they were originally much further in the future. But the more we got into the details and fleshed them out, I think we both realized that this was actually an immediate situation that we were presenting. And the date just kind of was a topic of conversation between the two of us. It kept getting closer and closer. And by the time we were pretty far along this novel, we realized that the date itself was going to be the title of the book, 2034.
So, Admiral, what about that date of what happens in the next several years that could bring us to this point?
I'll give you three big trends that I see which concern me. Number one is growing Chinese assertiveness, particularly in their claims of ownership of the entire vast South China Sea. Secondly, rising nationalism within China, within the population of China, something that President Xi has stoked the flames of in his quest to become, if you will, the new Mao. And then thirdly, the rise of devastating cyber technologies and the speed at which China is accessing them. All of those trend lines point in a bad direction from the perspective of the United States of America, roughly 10 to 15 years from now.
One of the things I find so interesting about the book, Admiral, is that you the way this book is set up is it's set entirely in a small destroyer on the seas of the North Atlantic. So this is very character driven. It is not super techno. You keep it. The consequences and the ideas are enormous, but the setting is rather intimate.
The setting is intimate. I think you're referring to actually a previous novel that inspired me, which is The Bedford Incident, which is the one that is set in the North Atlantic. Our novel, 2034, is set in a number of different venues around the world. But you're right. It is a very intimate portrait, really driven by the characters. And, you know, if we could, Elliot, just say a word about some of these fascinating characters we've created.
Well, I was, you know, the characters are really the ones who take you into the world of 2034. So there is a, you know, female American admiral, a Chinese admiral who is of split American-Chinese parentage, a Iranian brigadier general who is a veteran of the Forever Wars, but obviously fighting on the Iranian side. But I think you absolutely hit it, Joe. This is, you know, this is a book about war, and wars are fought by people. And if you want to tell a story of any war, to include the story of the next world war, yes, the technology is going to be important, but you also have to really sit down and drill into the psychology of the participants. And that's what we endeavor to do.
So, Admiral, why China?
Because China is the looming tower of our time. They are the only nation that is accelerating in the competition globally. And what we need to avoid is that we don't stumble into an actual conflict, because sometimes cold wars become hot wars. Sometimes skirmishes lead to battles and battles lead to wars. And China has enormous capability. And they are coming into friction with us at so many points around the globe. My assessment is that's going to continue. We better up our game across the spectrum of national power, to include military, but also our diplomacy. Our developmental aid has to be better targeted. We need to have a better sense of how we are strategically communicating about ourselves and our role in the world. So China is rising. Doesn't mean we have to go to war with them, but we ought to be mindful that that historically is an outcome that has occurred before in human history, when an established power is challenged by a rising power. When was the most recent example? Just over 100 years ago, established power, Great Britain, rising power, Kaiser's Germany, World War. Let's avoid that.
Ellie, what was it like for you writing in the future and writing of something of a to look down the pike and given your experience and to put that into practice?
Well, I like to tell people, and I think it's true, that, you know, for a book that takes on a very grim subject, you know, we had a lot of fun writing it. And I think readers will experience this book as a page turner, in so much as it moves very, very quickly. So, you know, in that respect, you know, this book, I feel, is a pace with many of my other books, in that it deals with conflict. It centers the individuals who are embroiled in conflict. And I think what was new for me, and a lot of fun, was integrating the technology into that, the geopolitics into that, and, you know, having a great collaborator to kick ideas around and do the writing with.
And I don't think I mentioned this in the introduction, but you're a Marine combat veteran yourself. So these are that War certainly is a subject you have written about before. And so what is it like to then share the pen, if you will?
It's great when you have a collaborator and your visions are aligned like ours were. And I think that's why, you know, Jim is a writer, has written 10 different books. And so for us, you know, when I said we wanted to see if we could write the first chapter, it was that we wanted to see if our working styles were aligned, and they were, and our vision for this book was very much aligned. So for me, it took something that I usually am, a struggle that is usually a struggle of one person. And it was nice to have, a little bit of company on the quest that is always a book.
Admiral, I think the last time you were on, you were talking about one of your works of nonfiction. You've written several works of nonfiction. So I assume you always felt you had a novel in you.
Oh, I think every nonfiction writer wakes up and looks in the mirror in the morning and says, this is the year I'm going to write a novel. And I've certainly always felt that. This is my 10th book, but my first novel. And I'm very lucky to have hooked a collaborator like Elliot, who's an experienced novelist. I learned a lot in writing the book. I'm hoping it won't be my last novel. And I hope that Elliot and I can come together on another project at some point.
We talked a moment ago about why China, but this idea of a world war, Admiral, that is so scary. I mean, just the idea of it, to have a world war, is it inevitable given the global nature of things that any future war would be a world war?
I don't think it's inevitable, but certainly history gives us a lot of examples of situations where there's a bipolar construct, as I mentioned earlier, an established power challenged by a rising power. Look, this goes back, I'm Greek American, I know this. This goes back 2,500 years ago to Athens and Sparta. And it's a pattern that has reoccurred frequently in human history. We would be very smart to be mindful that it is a distinct reality. And also in more recent history, let's face it, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, we probably came very close to a nuclear exchange between the United States and the Soviet Union. The tools of war have only gotten bigger, scarier, more dangerous, to include now cyber. So there's a lot to worry about, and that's, again, why we wrote 2034.
You write about in the book of failure of American imagination. How do you see that, Admiral, when it comes to our current defense strategy?
Complete this phrase with me. I never could have imagined, fill it in, 9/11. I never could have imagined a 20-year war in Afghanistan. I assess that today we are insufficient in our imagineering, if you will. We are doing a little better. We've created a space force. We're thinking about a cyber force. We're investing more in hypersonic technology. We're investing more in space itself, in the platforms we put there. So we're making progress, but I think we're still bound to thinking more in very conventional ways about massive land armies, about huge nuclear-powered aircraft carriers. All those will be important perhaps, but I assure you, unmanned vehicles, cyber, special forces, those are going to be the coin of the realm going into conflict in the future. We've got work to do.
How much of a threat is it, Elliot, when we are so worried about what is happening in our own little world? And I mean, obviously the pandemic is a global one. But besides that, in our squabbles that we have, political squabbles and the great friction that we have, what does that do to take our attention away from what is happening abroad?
Well, I think you just laid it out. It very much does. Our endless domestic squabbles, the hyperpartisanship that characterizes our politics, It makes it so we are incapable of looking beyond our own shores and assessing the threats that exist to us. And it makes us also incapable politically of putting together strategies, long-term strategies, to meet those threats. So in many respects, we're living in four-year or perhaps even two-year increments if you're looking at midterm election cycles. And so it forces us into somewhat dysfunctional behaviors, and it gives our adversaries, for instance, like the Chinese, who are able to think strategically along far further time horizons, a real advantage when it comes to positioning themselves for the next conflict.
And Admiral, how do you feel about that?
I think Elliot has it about right. And I just want to draw a line under the idea of long-range planning.
Right.
China thinks holistically about the 50-year future, the 100-year future, the 200-year future. We don't do that in the United States. Our political system hampers us. Even so, we need more a bipartisan assessment of the big problems looking further into the future. And that's climate change. It is national debt. It is certainly the rise and the challenge of China. It's our vulnerabilities in cyber. We're not going to solve these things on a two-year cycle between elections. We have got to start thinking longer term. And perhaps that's a lesson from 2034 as well.
Do you think we'll heed the lesson? I mean, do you think we'll understand that we can understand this better to keep us from seeing the next world war?
I think that's the big question for all of us. And, you know, I have two daughters who are young millennials, and I'll tell you, they look at the two political parties and just shake their heads. I think there is a growing sense, particularly of that generation coming along, that we have got to work together, and events will force us that way. Having said all that, let's face it, the pandemic, which one would have guessed might have brought us all together,
right,
actually created, it feels, even more political division, to our shame, in my view.
Could you talk a little bit about the politics of your job? I mean, you spent 37 years in the Navy, 4 years at Annapolis. What was the ratio and the understanding of the political world outside of what you're doing? And has that changed over time to perhaps a dangerous level?
Well, let me start by saying I'm a political independent. I am neither a registered Republican nor Democrat. I was vetted for vice president by Hillary Clinton, one of six people actually vetted, and I was offered a cabinet post by the Trump administration. So I'm a centrist. And I think most in the military, not all, but most, want to focus on defending the country, looking forward against our potential opponents, doing their job day after day after day, whether that's marching through Afghanistan and Iraq like Elliot did, or driving destroyers through the South China Sea as I did. But I do feel there is creeping politicization in the military. And that, you know, it's a reflection of society. But boy, we want to avoid that. I know Elliot has written about that over the last year or so. Elliot,
yes.
Thoughts?
Yeah, I would just add that if you look to history, and particularly the history of republics, it never ends well when a republic has dysfunctional politics at home and a very large standing professional military. It's just not a healthy recipe, and that's the exact position we're in right now. Fortunately, as we've seen every facet of American life and every institution politicized, one of the very few institutions that remains apolitical is the U.S. military. But heaven help us if the U.S. military becomes politicized.
So what do we do? I mean, there have been great concerns, especially in the last administration, but there have been many concerns. So what do we do about that?
I'll give you three ideas. One is we need to celebrate the idea of service broadly in the nation. And here I don't mean saying to military people, thank you for your service. I mean, we need to broaden that idea. We need to be thanking for their service our police, our firemen, our diplomats, our CIA officers, our Peace Corps volunteers, our doctors and nurses on the front lines of COVID, teachers, teach in packed classrooms under COVID conditions, you know, for $37,000 a year starting salary in Western New York. We need to celebrate service because it's bipartisan, it's nonpartisan. Number two, education. So many of the challenges we have in social injustice and inequality, over time, the way to address those is with education, more funding for that. And I don't care if you're an R or a D, you ought to get behind the idea of spending on education. And then third and finally, I would say, look for political candidates who are willing to reach across the aisles. I lived in Massachusetts. It's the most liberal state in the country, yet it has a Republican governor, Charlie Baker. Find people like him who can reach across the aisle, or my congressman when I lived in Massachusetts, Seth Moulton, a veteran who was a young congressman, a Democrat, but very willing to reach across the aisles. We should support and find candidates like that. There's three ideas to start us off.
Absolutely. Three very good ideas. Elliot, anything you'd like to add to that? Of how to
avoid
those?
No, I just want to underscore that, you know, that service unites us and that we all need to find ways to serve.
The name of the new book is 2034, A Novel of the Next World War. It is published by Penguin Press and is authored by Elliot Ackerman and Admiral James Stavridis. I want to thank you both for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for your service and as well as for the terrific novel. Be well.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks, you.
Joe.
Again, the name of the book is 2034, A Novel of the Next World War by Elliot Ackerman and Admiral James Stavridis. The book is published by Penguin Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.